Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. So normally when I have a guest on, it's for you guys. Today, my guest is for me, and I think you're going to enjoy him, though. His name is Mike Johnston, one of the best drummers you're ever going to see, and certainly one of the best teachers you're ever going to see. You can find him on YouTube. He has a huge presence on YouTube, and you can find him at mikeslessons.com. As most of you know from listening to the show the past 24 years, I'm a musician, have been since I was about 14, did just under 1,000 gigs with the Dave Glover Band alone in the last 20 years, but then when COVID came along, and I kind of stopped playing drums, and recently started kind of dipping my toe back in. I was watching some videos, and I ran across Mike and just kind of fell in love with his approach. Just cool, cool guy. And he joined us now. Mike, it's really great to meet you. Thanks for spending some time with us.
What an intro. Holy mackerel.
Dude, you've had an effect on me. First of all, you cost me money because yes. I was watching you and I'm like, well, here it is. He plays Gretsch drums and I play Ludwigs. So
that's the whole problem.
I traded my Vista Lights for a set of Brooklyns. I traded my Zildjians for a set of Meinls. I sound exactly the same. So thanks for nothing.
Well, and the good news is it's all in the gear. Like, you don't even have to practice.
I tell you,
all you have to do is buy the stuff.
I know you're kidding, but the manufacturers make so much money off that because whoever your favorite drummer is, whether it's Mike Johnston or Jeff Porcaro, and you're like, oh, Pearl drums with three ride toms, that's the way to go. And we've always done that.
All jokes aside, it really is the way that I play Gretsch drums because my hero Phil Collins played Gretsch drums.
Cool.
So it really is a big thing. By the way, just as a Californian, I heard something during your news segment about 60-mile-an-hour winds and, what was it, half-dollar-sized hail?
Dude.
That can't be real.
Stay in California.
Oh, it's real.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
3 weeks ago, we had a storm, and Kevin Wheeler, who's one of my co-hosts sitting here, who's a big music guy, by the way. He's more of a Slipknot kind of guy, though.
Yeah.
More of a Weinberg kind of guy. But yeah, he had hail as big as baseball.
Yep. Right in the backyard.
So I'm excited to, I don't know, I guess be lucky enough to bring you guys, your listeners, the news that the Dave Glover Show will be now hosted in Folsom, California, in the MikesLessons.com studios with zero chance of wind or rain.
We'll be there.
And no clouds.
I'll be sitting in a big-ass Gretsch set right next to you.
You can't even see him. He's already packing.
Let's go. We've got six different rooms here. We've got Gretsch kits in every room. The air conditioning is just where you need it to be. I've got sparkling water in the fridge. Everyone's invited. Let's go.
I really, really might come to one of your camps, but I'm too embarrassed at the moment. But I have your next video, and I'm not even kidding. Like, you should call it the pride and shame of the self-taught drummer, which I am. And so I'm 59 years old. I've been playing since I was 14. And for about all of those years, but the last one, I was very cocky about being a self-taught drummer, like Rudiment Schmudiment. And then my son, who's 29 now, I got him lessons when he was 12. And by the time he was 14, he was playing, you know, circles around me. And I'm like, what was that you just did? He's like, it's a paradiddle-diddle. I'm like, stop cussing. What is that thing you just did? Like, I had no friggin' idea. And so thanks to you, and I'm also mad at you because I just got myself a practice pad and I'm just going through the rudiments. And I love what you say about you have to know the language. And after 24 years of doing a radio show, I feel like I know the language of a radio show. I feel like I can pull things out almost instantaneously from the back of my brain. I can't do that with drums. I only know how to kind of fake it. And doing it for real is so much harder than faking it, as you know.
Absolutely. And I would say for anyone that's ever learned a second language, music is like that for a long time. You're saying memorized sentences, but you're not saying them the way you would say that sentence in English. And if I was in Mexico and I needed to go to the bathroom, I would say, de donde el baño? But that is literally, where is the bathroom? In California, I would never say that. I would say, bro, what's up, man? Hey, look, I have to pee. Where is your restroom?
Right.
And so I would say it with my own personality, my own slang, and it's really frustrating as a musician when that art is inside you, but you can't get it out. So when I think about things like rudiments or any kind of music theory, it's just a way to get what's trapped inside you out. And hopefully, if you do the work and you do it properly, you forget all of the education. It all goes away and you just finally express yourself and you find yourself on this instrument, whether it be a drum set or a saxophone, truly speaking the language. And that, honestly, all jokes aside, that's a beautiful thing.
And I'm sure that if you and I were to sit down and play, you would go, you just did a paradiddle-diddle. You just did a flam something, because I played for, you know, professionally for years and years and years. I had to be able to do it competently enough to stay in bands, but I didn't realize the language. I didn't know what I was doing, and therefore I couldn't build on it.
And that would be the same thing as someone that learned to speak just by being around other people, being in front of an English teacher for the first time. They say, well, that action word, that's a verb. And then when you describe that over there, that's an adjective. And the person speaking would say, I don't care. I just speak. And it's like, well, but if you knew more about mm-hmm. what you were saying, you could say it with more empathy or with more joy. You could express yourself better. So it's never a situation where the self-taught musician isn't as good as the schooled musician or anything like that. I mean, there's so many self-taught drummers that I still idolize to this day. And I'm in awe of, like, so you just sat in a room and figured that out? Like, that's incredible. And then I'm looking at my stack of 1,000 books going, like, should I have just gone to New York and played?
I could have played soccer too or something. Right. Exactly.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. So I think that I think the best is when it's a combination of both, and really where the theory comes in, or even like what you do on your radio show, somebody might say, like, how did you do that? And you're like, oh, that's just a segue. Like, we do that all the time, or that's a bumper, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing where you might do something, but it would only annoy you when someone else asked you what that is and you couldn't explain it to them.
So if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Mike Johnston, my new very best friend in the world. And you can find Mike on YouTube. You can find him at mikeslessons.com. If you're a drummer, you need to find him. And if you're not a drummer, I think you'll enjoy it. I really, really, truly do. I know I'm giving Mike a lot of pats on the back, but I've watched dozens and dozens and dozens of these videos now. And Mike's just a cool, funny guy. And a lot of his teaching really is kind of Zen, kind of Buddhist. There's a whole lot of just like, sit back, do this, do that. Mike, I've told this story so many times, you'll appreciate it more than anyone. The one lesson I had, I was about 16, and Billy Cobham came through town and did a clinic. And so each one of us got to go up and sit there with Billy for, I don't know, 30 seconds. And so he's like, I'll never forget, he goes, do what you do best. And so I played a little riff and he goes, everyone stop what you're doing. And everyone's out there doing the little rudiments and stuff. And he's like, listen to what this kid just did. And I'm like, modern drummer is months away, right?
It's next.
And he goes, do it again for everybody. And I do it again. And he goes, oh, no, man, that's not what I thought you did at all. Never mind. Everyone go back to what you're doing. Swear to God.
Wow.
Swear to God.
Way to go, Bill.
Just.
I got to say, as someone that grew up in that same time and with those same like hardcore educated. I mean, Billy is obviously one of the greatest drummers to ever live. His album Spectrum changed my life. But they come from a different school for sure. And I just took all those lessons from the big teachers that I had and just thought, I wonder if you could do this with an ounce of empathy. Could that be done? Is that possible?
Could I just
for 1 second imagine what this person's feeling? And that's literally like what is the common thread through everything I do educationally, is I'm thinking, what is the person that's at home watching this on the computer feeling right now? How can I connect with them? What's the person in front of me at a drum camp feeling while I'm staring at them? They're in, you know, they're with me for the first time. There's a bunch of drummers in the room. Everyone's staring at them. What does their body feel like? Are they losing feeling in their skin right now? Like, mm-hmm. I try to be as empathetic mm-hmm. as possible and teach from that perspective.
It's so true. I'm a few years older than you, but every coach I ever had, most bosses, any restaurant job, it was like a rite of passage that you just get abused. And I remember thinking, like, you're getting the donuts out of me. I'm making your long johns, but I freaking hate you. And maybe I could make them even better if you just gave me a little bit of instruction, or maybe you smiled at me now and then. So
yeah, or just had a little bit of patience. And, you know, I remember I learned the lesson from my teacher, Pete Magadini. He was one of the greatest educators to ever live. And I remember being young and you had to audition to take lessons with him. So that's kind of where he was at. And I got in and I got one of the spots, the 5 spots for the year. And we were in our second or third lesson, and I was extremely nervous playing anything in front of him. And I kept messing up. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And this guy was truly like a god to me. And he just said, Mike, I'm going to stop you right there. I work for you. You're the one paying me. You never have to be sorry about anything. The only thing you should ever be sorry about is if you didn't practice or you're not trying. Other than that, I'll wait for you to get this down. And I say that in every drum camp when somebody's saying like, I'm sorry. I'm like, stop. It's cool, man.
That's
like
super cool.
All you're doing is going through what I went through, but you're just doing it in front of people. So Honestly, I should be apologizing to you. Be like, hey, sorry about the public embarrassment here. I was able to practice this in a room in my parents' garage. You're having to do it in front of your peers. And it's something we all go through.
You know, let's expand that even more, Mike. When I was a young player, I had Tim Masiko and Jeff Scherseth. Those were the only two drummers in town. They're the only two drummers I had to compete with, the only two drummers I had to feel like I was better than. Now, I open up TikTok, and there are fetuses that are playing double bass drum, and it just makes you feel like, for example, I play guitar as well, not very well, but I play it, and there are some guitarists who inspire me to play. Then you watch a Stevie Ray Vaughan or a Steve Vai or someone, and you go, I'm never going to even hold a guitar again. It's so, when you're watching everyone else's produced highlight reel and you're living your own blooper reel, it's tough.
It's really tough. And when you start to pay attention to the things that you're not into, you realize it's all that way. So you'll realize that no one has sold a house under $2.6 million in the last 3 years.
You're
apparently
right. You're right.
There's only mansions. And I'm just thinking, like, there's got to be a 3-bed, 2-bath, like in Rancho Cordova somewhere right. for $300,000. So the whole world is that way. And so that's why it's so important to let people know, like, look, all you have to do right now is be 1% better than who you were yesterday. That's the only person you're in competition with. And if we can get rid of better and worse, there's no more of that. All there is a timeline. When I look at somebody that is, even if they're 7 years old and they're playing things I'll never be able to play, I just think like, oh, that's so much further down the timeline than me. But if I just keep my head down and do the work, I'll arrive at that point. And that's way easier on the ego than, oh, he or she is so much better than me. It's like, no, you're not better than me. You're just further down the timeline because you've had more dedication and more hours to this thing you're working on than I have.
Yeah. Talking to Mike Johnson, you can find Mike at mikeslessons.com. Let's do two sets of advice, one selfishly just for me, the other with for everyone out there. So for someone like me that has played for literally decades, and I'm kind of starting all over again and going to square one, would you recommend, don't even go to the kit, just sit there and watch Ancient Aliens and do, you know, doubles and whatnot, and then take it to the kit?
No, I would actually probably recommend the opposite. So you're at a place in your life where you're an adult, you know what you want out of things. The drum set should occupy one space in your entire life, and that should be joy. So do what brings you the most joy, and understand that the better you get at this instrument, the more joy you will unlock. So learn songs, learn famous grooves, and then ask yourself, what allows this thing to exist? If you learn Fool in the Rain by Led Zeppelin, the big picture is it's a halftime shuffle. Then ask, what's a halftime shuffle made out of? Triplets. Okay, now I need to work on my triplet vocabulary. So zoom out just a little bit and find out, what is the DNA of this thing that I'm trying to learn? But I wouldn't waste an ounce of my time learning something that didn't bring me joy.
I love it. So let's expand that out to everyone, because like my daughter is a freshman at KU. She's learning everything new. There are people out there who are my age and they're wanting, you know what? I've never played golf. I want to try and play golf. I want to learn to do this. I want to do that. As a really great teacher, what advice you have for people who are trying to learn something that's very difficult?
Especially if they're adults, be patient. Constantly, I'm finding adults are comparing themselves to how they learned their last hobby, which was probably during their childhood. And their life was so much different. They had no financial stresses on them. They didn't have a family. All they had to do was wake up, fake that they liked school, and then play and do the thing. And so as adults, we have all these pressures on us. And so it's like, just be patient. You don't have enough time for this to come as quickly to you as the thing you learned when you were 12. This is going to take a long haul. So just do it for the joy. I know it's silly to say like, oh, you got to enjoy the process. But in all honesty, if you're only purpose in doing this thing is the outcome, you've already lost. Like, you'll never get there. So that's why the one thing I would say, though, to anyone learning something is, if you can pick something that's art related, the great thing about art is there's no shelf life for you. There's no prime. You don't miss your peak because you're over 30 or over 40 or over 60. Hmm. Like, my favorite drummers in the world right now are well into their 70s. Billy Cobham, I just saw him 2 years ago. He's got to be in his 70s now, maybe even older. And so in any art form, you just get more mature. You make better choices. You start to open up your ears more if you're a musician and you hear the people around you. And so I would say, if you can, just involve some sort of art in your life, because then you'll never have a peak and you'll never have to look back on the glory days. You're always in the glory days.
I love it. So after 24 years on the radio, I'm used to meeting people who say, "Oh my gosh, I feel like you're my buddy. I listen to you so," and that's how I feel now, because I watch you so often and didn't disappoint. So thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Appreciate it.
All right, pal. Talk to you soon. Throwback Thursday, Rach.
Yeah, we can get a couple of these in. 249 years ago in 1775, Paul Revere began his famous ride from Charlestown to Lexington, Massachusetts, warning American colonists that the British are coming. 249 years ago.
That blows me away. It's always 200. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bicentennial was 1976. I remember it well, but it's still 200 years to me. It's not 249. That's nuts.
What I get really messed up by is the fact that, like, that feels like so long ago, but in, like, the scope of the, you know, like, people who come back from traveling over in England or whatever, and they're like, "Yeah, I went to a bar that opened in 1250.
Yeah.
101 years ago in 1923, the first game was played at Yankee Stadium, and the Yankees beat the Boston Red Sox 4-1. Babe Ruth hit the stadium's first home run. Hmm. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that game just to see how similar or different it was.
Yeah, a lot different. It would look a lot different to you. Some ways, no, but I mean, like, the way they moved, the things they did, the way they threw, it was like a little different.
And one more here. 90 years ago in 1934, the first laundromat opened in Fort Worth, Texas.
Wow, my mom's older than laundry. 440 DGS. A woman tried to pull a Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh.
Said that her uncle died a few hours before. She put his dead corpse into a wheelchair, wheeled him to the local bank, and tried to take out a loan of $3,400 in his name. And he wasn't even wearing sunglasses. The guy goes, "I think your uncle's dead, like real dead." And she's like, "What?
This is the first I'm hearing of this."
$3,400 is such a specific but also kind of small amount
right?
of money.
Yeah. So she had to hold his head up the entire time. And she tried to help him sign the paperwork. So they got that far. Evidently, the bank teller has it on video.
Where's the video at?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Some fun facts?
Yes, please.
Americans throw away $70 million in coins every year.
That's wild.
Just toss them.
Wow.
The kid who played Charlie in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was never in a movie before and never in a movie again. His name is Peter Ostrom, and he became a veterinarian in New York.
Good man.
So that he has received about $10 in residuals every 3 months his entire life.
Hey, that's good money.
And in The Shining, when Shelley Duvall sees that all work and no play make Jack whatever, that Stanley Kubrick had his personal secretary type that 500 times on 500 pieces of paper, even though he knew he was only going to show about a dozen of them. That stack of paper that's sitting there is not an empty stack with tin on top the way I would have done it. They're literally 500 pages of paper.
You'd think that the lesson of the film that he was making would maybe make him think twice about making somebody do that.
Crazy?
With all those axes laying around.
It is National High Five Day. The trick to never screwing one up is that you look at the other person's elbow, not their hands.
I've heard that. I do it.
Oh.
Yeah, see, also, I have a rule. It's got to be elbow above the shoulder. That's a real high five.
That's stupid.
No, that's the real high five. Otherwise, it's patty cake.
You ever do this one? Down low. Too slow, Joe.
Otherwise, it's Patty Cake.
I wish I could have seen
you. You just broke Andrew.
I wish I could have videoed the look on your face when I said that.
Oh, you should have seen Andrew.
I'm so mad.
He's going to take it out on the spiders.
It's called a high five for a reason, not a mid five.